Department. In the end, the only thing that stopped Trump apparently was a threat from senior DOJ officials to resign. As the New York Times reported yesterday, just days before the insurrection, Trump held a meeting in the Oval Office about his plans for a coup. On the agenda was Trump's desire to install a loyalist as acting attorney general to carry out his demands for more aggressive investigations into his unfounded claims of election fraud. On the other side were the top leaders of the Justice Department who warned Trump that they and other senior officials would resign en masse. If he followed through, they received immediate support from another key participant, Pat Cipollone, the White House counsel. Trump's proposed plan, Cipollone argued, would be a murder-suicide pact.
So I murder you and then you commit suicide? I think I saw something like that once on SVU. SVU! We love SVU, don't we, folks? A great American program. We love Mr. Ice Lemonade and Richard Seltzer, a real original. Detective John Munch! Richard Seltzer started as a comedian. People don't know that. But I remember I saw him in 1983 at Catch a Rising Star. Nice guy, good guy, hated my guts.
The GOP has fallen back in line behind a guy who did everything he could to overthrow democracy and absolutely will try again if given the chance, a chance he apparently very much wants. The details in this Senate report are damning, and there are almost certainly more to come. There's enough material here for ESPN to do a four-part 30 for 30 and call it
One Day in January.
According to ex-White House Press Secretary Stephanie Grisham's new book, describes the White House as, quote, a clown car on fire running at full speed into a warehouse full of fireworks. But she apparently doesn't mention the part where she called shotgun. Former President Trump last week called into a prophecy-focused conservative Christian talk show and said, quote, nobody has done more for Christianity or for evangelicals or for religion itself than I have. Really? Nobody? You can't think of a single person? Jesus Christ. Former President Trump reportedly tells people constantly that he's running for president in 2024. Well, he doesn't tell everyone.
It's your year, Mike.
And this will be our year to the long time to come.
Donald Trump is the subject of yet another tell-all book about his time in office. This one is called Betrayal, the Final Act of the Trump Show. It was written by Jonathan Carl of ABC News. And among the many not-so-surprising surprises, Carl says that during the riot on January 6th, Trump was bragging about the size of the crowd that stormed the Capitol. Of course he was. Is there anything he won't brag about? It's like bragging about the size of your tumor. It's not something, it's not good. Someday he'll be looking up from the bowels of hell, elbowing his buddy Jeffrey Epstein, saying, can you believe how many people are dancing on my grave right now? It's size matters so much to him. It's almost as if he's insecure about something. And remember, do you remember that video on January 6th where Trump recorded that day after hours of saying nothing? Well, finally, his staff convinced him. They said, you have to make a video telling these people to stop ransacking the Capitol. And they finally convinced him. The book said he had to do multiple takes of the video because he kept forgetting to tell them to stop ransacking the Capitol. I would love to see the outtakes from that one. Elvis was in Des Moines, Iowa this weekend. He came out of his hole to treat supporters to an hour and 43 minutes of bitching about the election he lost and how he didn't lose the election and how he didn't concede because the election was stolen from him and why would he concede and all the stupid nonsense that runs on a loop in his brain. Trump has not officially announced that he is running in 2024, but he is definitely running in 2024, and he even has an idea for a campaign slogan.
So we're using the same slogan, make America great again, and we may even add to it, but we'll keep it. Make America great again, because we already did it, right? We're gonna make America great again. Make America great again, --, again. Make America great again, I don't know. If you think about it, it's more accurate. Make America great again. Because we made it great. Now we have to make it great again. So it's one of those things.
Yeah, it's one of those things.
Over and over and over and over again.
NBC News first to report earlier today that the Biden White House has decided, in fact, not to block the release of documents related to Trump, his presidency, and the insurrection. The move sets up a legal and potentially lengthy showdown between two presidents, current and former, over the issue of executive privilege.
The White House is blocking former President Trump from playing the executive privilege card, and the committee
investigating the January 6th insurrection says Donald Trump's minions will not get away with ignoring the rule of law.
Trump thought he could just unilaterally assert executive privilege, no questions asked. You're not president anymore, dude. That's not how it works. What's he going to do next? Try to book a flight on Air Force One?
What do you mean I can't use the plane anymore? But what about all those miles I racked up? Can I transfer them to JetBlue? JetBlue! We love JetBlue, don't we, folks? JetBlue, the first place I ever had a terror chip. And I remember... I said to the stewardess, there's something wrong with my chip. It's red. I have a red chip. And she told me, she said to me, sir, tears in her eyes, she said, sir, that's a seasonal root vegetable.
Now, before we dive into that story any further, the executive privilege story, not the Trump JetBlue terror chip story, I think we got all we're going to get from that. The man just refuses to go away. On Saturday, he went to Iowa to hold yet another rally where he repeated the same deranged lies about the election that he's been repeating for months. And yet, even his own crowd wasn't exactly electrified by hearing the same old incoherent nonsense over and over again.
You know, I was up by massive numbers on election day. It was even the news was saying, wow, what a big lead in Pennsylvania. I love Pennsylvania. I went to school in Pennsylvania, college. But what a great state and what great people. And I was up by so much, all of a sudden, the booths closed, the tabulation centers are closed, 3 o'clock in the morning. And shortly thereafter, we're tied. They know they got caught. All you have to do is listen to the numbers. And remember what I said. Joe Biden has launched a foreign invasion of his own country. Come on in. He said, come in. This is a sick thing that's happening to our country.
Wow, and I was worried about bringing audiences back. I never thought I'd say this, but maybe you should go into lockdown. You know, remote shows might be better for you. You could borrow my attic. Although, if you were in my attic, I'd never get any sleep. Honey, what's that noise? I think he's talking about how windmills kill birds. It's too... 2 in the morning. I know, but he had like 50 Diet Cokes. Why did you let him use our attic? Because he used to be president. I'm sorry that I respect the office. Also, I love the cutaways to sullen Trump fans just standing there in silence like tourists watching one of those gold statue guys in Times Square. So is he gonna, like, do something? And you could tell Trump was waiting for a crowd reaction, too. I mean, look at him. It's like watching a open mic night at the senior center.
Joe Biden said, come on in, come on in. Am I right? Cyrus knows what I'm talking about. Cyrus? Cyrus! Get the paddles, what else?
It's been liberating not having to think or care about what this lunatic says or does on a daily basis for the last few months. Unfortunately, the GOP has not felt the same way, they're still fully devoted to Trump. He was joined at his rally by Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley. Virtually the entirety of the Republican Party remains enthralled to Trump and committed to the big lie that the election was somehow stolen from him, as demonstrated by this interview the number 2 House Republican Steve Scalise did on Fox News Sunday.
Do you think the 2020 election was stolen from Donald Trump? And in continuing to make that charge, not having states do election reforms, but specifically making this charge that the election was stolen, do you think that that hurts, undermines American democracy?
Well, Chris, I've been very clear from the beginning. If you look at a number of states, they didn't follow their state-passed laws.
The states
all
certified.
They didn't follow those legislative rules. Right, but at the end of the day, are we going to follow what the Constitution says?
Do you think the election was stolen or not? I understand you think there were irregularities and things that need to be fixed. Do you think the election was stolen? Yeah.
And it's not just irregular. It's states that did not follow the laws set, which the Constitution says they're supposed to follow.
I like how they say the word irregularities without actually specifying what that means. It's that vague mafia talk they've all adopted. It's a shame what happened to your restaurant, but the boss got your last payment, and there was some irregularities. These guys can't actually give any example of widespread fraud because there aren't any, as multiple audits and roughly 60 court cases, including with several Trump-appointed judges, proved. But all they have are these bad conspiracy theories promoted by the rotating cast of weirdos who inhabit Trump's orbit, rambling incoherently about nonsense like Italian satellites, hacking voting machines, or mysterious midnight election dumps, or bamboo fibers on ballots. Last week, MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell once again repeated the insane claim that dead people had somehow voted.
I'll give you an example today. 2,650 people over the age of 100. Now, you might say, well, that could be. 2,000 of them were over 200. Wouldn't you like to live in that state? Granted, they were 200 and some years old. So obviously, one guy was 850.
They were 200 years old. These people that are voting are 200 years old. Of course, they're obviously not living.
They're obviously deceased, but one guy was 850 years old. Okay. and these are facts. You can get them from your own state's thing.
First of all, we know an 850-year-old who voted, okay? He was on TV. That's why Rudy's neck is hunched. He sleeps in a coffin that's one size too small. I couldn't afford the king size because I'm paying alimony to my cousin. It's not taboo amongst vampires. The immortal just have less to choose from. I also like how Lindell says these are facts, but then he can't even name the database where he got them. He just says you can get them from your own state's thing.
I went online to the thing and saw all the dead people who voted by looking at their birthdays and counting up the years.
Lindell, of course, is being sued for defamation by the election technology company Dominion, and now even a deep red state like Idaho is sending him a bill for an election audit because his claims were bogus. And Lindell's not the only one facing financial hardship thanks to his participation in the big lie. There's also Rudy Giuliani, who's reportedly drowning in legal bills after Trump refused to pay him. And now, in a newly released deposition, Rudy has explained why he worked for Trump without payment. An attorney in a defamation suit against Rudy asked Giuliani whether he was ever paid to represent the Trump campaign. Giuliani replied that he was not paid to represent the campaign and had been reimbursed for only his expenses, according to the transcript. The attorney then asked Giuliani why he would represent the Trump campaign without compensation. The president ordered me to do it, Giuliani said. Rudy, that's not how it works. Your client can't just order you to do something for free. You can't let Trump push you around anymore. You're a grown man. You're 850 years old. And yet, aside from some potential financial consequences for weirdos like Rudy and Lindell, the co-conspirators who fomented the January 6th insurrection and orchestrated the attempted coup have largely escaped accountability, like Texas Senator Ted Cruz, who hasn't faced any consequences for his role in trying to overturn the election results on January 6th. In fact, Cruz is still there in the Senate causing chaos. Just last week, he was whining that the GOP had done the bare minimum to avert economic catastrophe and mustered just enough votes to help Democrats raise the debt ceiling at the last minute, although he chose a very weird analogy.
I believe the end result of this game of chicken was clear. Unfortunately, yesterday, Republicans blinked. I think that was a mistake. But sometimes in a poker game, a bluff wins the pot. In this case, to mix my metaphors, which would make my high school English teacher very angry, in the game of chicken, Chuck Schumer won this game of chicken. As two trucks drove towards each other on a country road, one or the other was going to turn, or you were going to have a lot of dead chickens.
What? What the hell are you talking? You think when two trucks play chicken on a country road, they have to be full of chickens? That's not why they call it chicken. The hardest thing about the game of chicken is keeping your resolve. It's trying to concentrate above the din of terrified chickens and the truck, because, of course, theirs are the lives at stake. The Republican Party has fully embraced Trumpism and the big lie. They're trying to install Trump loyalists in key positions across the country and passing laws that would make it easier to steal the next election. One of his lawyers wrote an instruction manual for a coup, which they could easily use next time. These people should face consequences for trying to destroy a democracy that so far has stood the test of time. In fact, if you ask Mike Lindell, he'd probably say it's
850 years old.
Preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
For some reason or another, you sound a little taller on radio.
Moved by putting that judge's wife's phone number as his emergency contact, and that he had missed court-ordered mental health and drug testing appointments. At the end of this nearly two-hour episode, the judge in question told him, quote, you've engaged in a pattern of...
Supplemental insurances, life insurance, and employee ownership benefits. Apply online or call 1-800-342-5400 to see about joining our team.
9 months have passed since the January 6th insurrection, and more of the nearly 700 people charged in connection with it are starting to get their day in court. Here's one individual, for instance, Brandon Fellows. He's a 26-year-old from Albany, New York. He faces a felony charge for obstruction in connection with the riot. He showed up to the January 6th insurrection dressed like this, wearing a fake red beard and a USA coat. And here he is inside what prosecutors say is Oregon Senator Jeff Merkley's office, where, according to his criminal complaint, he smoked marijuana, which is not too different from what he told the CNN reporter at the scene.
We spoke to some people who broke into the Capitol.
Literally just what happened in there? Tell us what happened.
Yeah, we went in there and then I walked in and there's just a whole bunch of people lighting up in some Oregon room. I don't know if it's an Oregon, just tons of Oregon paintings, but they were smoking a bunch of weed in there.
So that guy was in court this week trying to get his bond status revoked. And against the advice of the judge, he chose to represent himself. He then accidentally admitted to two additional felonies. In cross-examination, a lawyer for the government got him to admit under oath that he had climbed into the Capitol through a broken window and that he had tried to get the previous judge on the case removed by putting that judge's wife's phone number as his emergency contact and that he had missed court-ordered mental health and drug testing appointments. At the end of this nearly two-hour episode, the judge in question told him, quote, you've engaged in a pattern of behaviors that shows contempt for the criminal justice system. The judge ordered Brandon Fellows back into the custody of a D.C. jail. Zoe Tillman's a senior reporter for BuzzFeed News who just published a database of documents in connection with the first 100 guilty pleas in the Capitol insurrection. Former federal judge Nancy Gertner, who served on the U.S. District Court.
Here's 2018 new music from Yola Tenga's There's a Riot Going On album. The song is called For You Too.
Silver tongue and ride.
Now to absorb some local color through the magic of AM radio.
The book of Revelations tells us to watch for the seven signs of evil.
Sign of evil number 4.
Continuing our sign of evil countdown, here's Vanessa Williams.
They are standing still.
Upon the telegraph.
Number 9. Number 9.
Number nine.
out in the moon for what?
Hi, I'm Deborah from Athens. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Acra.
Hey, Donna.
What's on your mind, honey?
Do you know who really holds the master key to the Love Motel doors?
I sure do, honey. It's all the good people that keep this lovely radio station running.
That's right. They've made room on their airwaves for your broken hearts, our favorite love songs, and the entire community that makes this community feel like a community.
So, on this 10-year anniversary pledge drive, go ahead and type out wgxc.org/donate and drop some change into the WGXC love pot, and you can go ahead and tell them Donna and Honey sent you.
And then stop by the Love Motel every first Thursday at 8 p.m. right here on WGXC, Acre, Hudson, Catskill.
We love spending the night with you.
Now, from Survival comes an economical do-it-yourself fallout shelter.
Civil defense approved and easy to assemble. Takes just a weekend.
Get maximum protection from nuclear fallout for your family.
See a Survival shelter today.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Christian Hayes of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Give me liberty or give me death.
WGXC, the station that gives you liberty.
A star's trek to space obscures deadly desert treks below. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. Star Trek was in the news this week as actor William Shatner, who played Captain Kirk in the classic 1960s TV program, blasted into space at the age of 90 as one of billionaire Jeff Bezos's latest Blue Origin space tourists. In this remote region of West Texas, mere miles from Bezos's gilded launch pad, a trek of another kind takes place every day as migrants, many fleeing violence, the climate crisis, and poverty, attempt the difficult journey from Mexico to the U.S. While the spacecraft lifted its privileged passengers aloft, lost lives littered the Chihuahuan desert floor far below. Travel by foot under the blazing hot sun is difficult through the sand, rock, and cacti, made harder by the militarized enforcement of the broken U.S. immigration system. Thousands of migrants have died attempting this journey. Armando Alejo Hernandez was last heard from in early May. Armando's disappearance in the desert has been addressed in this column before, also with a reference to the Blue Origin space facility in nearby Van Horn, Texas. In July, the heat of the desert was at its deadliest, and Jeff Bezos was locked in what has been dubbed the billionaire space race with Richard Branson, who flew with a small crew aboard his own spaceship to achieve a few minutes of suborbital weightlessness. Their brief trips received international acclaim. If only the media scrum would linger and focus their cameras on the more perilous journeys of these earthbound desert travelers. Armando spent a decade in the United States, working and building a family with two sons who were U.S. citizens by birth. Armando, though, never obtained legal documentation and was deported in 2016. His older son, Derek, speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour, described the genesis of Armando's fateful trip last May.
Not having him around was kind of tough on me because I grew up pretty much my whole childhood, like my younger age. When I was younger, all the time with my dad. We were on the phone one day and I asked him if he could come back because I just wanted him around. And the last time I got to see him in person was in 2019. And it was before that, I didn't get to see him for 4 years.
Alexis Corona was in a small group of migrants traveling north with Armando. He recently told Telemundo TV,
Armando said he couldn't walk anymore, and he wanted to see if he could be rescued. From where he stayed, maybe 8 or 9 miles ahead, the rest of us were caught by immigration agents. And we explained to them where Armando was, that he couldn't walk anymore, that he didn't have enough water or food. And the reaction was, oh, okay, well, if he stayed behind, he'll just have to stay there.
Derek was communicating with his father, Armando, at the time. Armando sent recorded voice messages to his son, describing his clothing, that he had no water and felt he couldn't go on. He sent a photo with a building high on a mountain in front of him. The photo clearly shows a U.S. government radar installation placing Armando along the southern slope of Eagle Peak in Hudspeth County, not far from El Paso. Farther south, Border Patrol agent Alex Hara, interviewed for the documentary Missing in Brooks County, admitted,
We don't call them people anymore. We call them bodies. They start calling them people, then it starts getting to you.
Brooks County is home to one of the inland CBP, that's Customs and Border Protection checkpoints, which drives migrants lacking documentation off of the county's single main roadway and into the desert to avoid capture.
The increase of migration has begun since the beginning of the Biden administration.
That's Eddie Canales, the director of the South Texas Human Rights Center based in Brooks County, speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour.
I have families here, representatives from different countries right now that are still searching for their missing loved ones. They're in the background right now with me. We're doing a two-day tour here in South Texas, and the number has increased. There has been 99 recoveries of bodies and skeletal remains in Brooks County alone this year.
Average temperatures in the desert are cooler at this time of year, but unguided travel through the harsh environment is still perilous. Many more will needlessly die. Immigrant rights activists are pressuring the White House and Congress to ensure that a pathway to citizenship for undocumented residents is included in the Build Back Better bill. The overall bill is being blocked by conservative Democratic Senators Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Kyrsten Sinema of another border state, Arizona, home to the equally dangerous Sonoran Desert. It's fine to gaze heavenward, to reach for the stars, inspired by the green card-holding Canadian actor William Shatner. But the crises that engulf us now will not be solved by space shots, but by people pulling together here on Earth, with feet firmly planted on the ground. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
German measles, Russian flu, Montezuma's revenge. And why do we say a foreign word whenever someone sneezes?
Tomorrow, I'll take a look at swine flu, up close and personal. This is Les Nesbitt.
One speeding ticket, Columbia County.
Columbia County, everybody gets speeding tickets. How else do they pay for the roads to get plowed in the winter?
Voting this year begins October 23rd and ends November 2nd with town post, countywide positions, and a few state Supreme Court seats at stake. In Greene County, the Board of Elections office on the fourth floor of the Greene County Office Building in Catskill is the only polling station October 23rd through Halloween. This year, Columbia County has two sites to vote between October 23rd and 31st. The Board of Elections office in the Columbia County Office Building in Hudson, and also the Martin H. Glenn Municipal Center in Valencia. The so-called early voting hours in both counties change every day, from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday, October 23rd, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Sunday, October 24th, noon to 8 p.m. Monday, October 25th, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesday, October 26th, noon to 8 p.m. Wednesday, October 27th, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Thursday, October 28th, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Friday, October 29th, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday, October 30th, and 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Sunday, October 31st. Then traditional local voting spots are open from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. on November 2nd. The risk of exposure to COVID-19 is still a valid reason to obtain an absentee ballot in this year's election, and those ballots can be mailed in through November 2nd. One change in this election: a new state law passed in 2021 restores the right to vote for a person convicted of a felony upon release from incarceration, regardless of if they are on parole or have a term of post-release supervision. If a convicted felon is not incarcerated, they are now eligible to register to vote in New York. Melanie Lekosevic is reporting for Columbia Green Media on the three candidates vying to fill seats on the Ankrum Town Board: Amy Gold, Bonnie Hund, and Steve Oliha. Gold and her family were weekenders, having owned property in Columbia County since 1982, but they have lived full-time in Ankrumdale since 2015. Gold is a communications professional for a global high-tech firm. She is running unaffiliated and has never sought or held elective office before. Gold sees the lack of broadband access and cellular coverage to be the top issue facing the three hamlets that make up the town of Ankrum. She would have the town board prioritize this issue because it is a safety and health concern, as well as an educational work mandate. Hund has lived in the county for 14 years and is the owner-operator of a hair salon. She is a Democrat and a town board incumbent, having served since 2017. Hund previously served as supervisor of the town of Amenia in Dutchess County from 2003 to 2005. Hund sees the lack of housing caused by income inequality and high home prices as the town's biggest challenge. She said her extensive experience on numerous committees and boards and as a longtime small business owner has given her important insight into what is needed to adapt a changing community. Oliha was a part-time resident of Columbia County for 47 years and 5 years full-time. He is an executive coach and former CEO. Oliha is a registered Republican. He wants the town to expand the number of active participants on the various volunteer boards and committees. He is the member of several town committees as well as the chair of the Zoning Board of Appeals. Oliha hopes to get more young people involved in local organizations, especially the Ankrum Fire Company. And he would also support the town implementing new technology at Town Hall to expand remote participation and provide options for other events, as well as develop ways to effectively use social media. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Noah Zweifel is reporting for the Altamont Enterprise. In the town of Bern, incumbents are not running for re-election, and both the Republicans and the Democrats have fielded a full slate of candidates. Democrats had dominated town politics for decades, but with the 2016 election, even with an enrollment heavily favoring the Democrats, the town went for Donald Trump, and the GOP found a way into local politics. In 2020, the majority Republican town board took office, and this year, the one remaining Democrat on the town board is not running for re-election. In November, Democrat Peggy Christman, a retired state police lieutenant, is facing off against Republican Dennis Palau, who is retired from the U.S. Army and is now serving as the town's deputy supervisor. Republican incumbent Sean Lyons is not seeking re-election. In the race for a seat on the town board, carrying a 2-year term because of a resignation, Democrat Timothy Lippert, the town's former code enforcement officer, is running against longtime town clerk Anita Clayton. Clayton, a registered Democrat, did not win the Democratic line in the June primary, so she is running on the GOP line. A 4-way race for 2 4-year terms on the board pits Democrats Jennifer Merrill Fuller, a community volunteer, and retired biologist Patrick Martin against Republicans Thomas Doolin, a physician's assistant, and Leo Vane, a retired pilot who was appointed to the board in March. 6 of the 8 town board candidates participated in an online live forum last week. Doolin, who was working at the time of the live event, answered questions prior to the event. Palo, the GOP candidate for supervisor, declined to participate, and Vane, a Republican candidate for town board, failed to respond to multiple invitations. Read the details of the forum in the Altamont Enterprise. William J. Kimball reports in the Daily Freeman that there are 4 first-time candidates competing for 2 seats on the Saugerties Town Board this fall. Democrats Kevin Freeman and Kaylee Zaloga, and Republicans also on the conservative line, Mary Peg Nau and Zachary Horton, are running for 4-year terms on the board. This may be the first election for Nau, but she was appointed to a vacancy on the board in 2020 and is running for a full term. Board member John Schoonmaker is not seeking re-election. Freeman, 62, is a baker with the Hudson Valley Dessert Company and has lived in Saugerties for 7 years. He said, and I quote, "I think that housing is the number one issue. It's not a one-size-fits-all solution. On the table would be regulations of short-term rentals and looking at zoning to maybe increase density for availability of accessory dwelling," end quote. Horton said, and I quote, "It seems that with the increase in our population, our emergency services are really going to need to make sure that their equipment is up to date and that they are properly staffed," end quote. Now, 75, is a lifelong Saugerties resident and previously served as town tax collector. She said, and I quote, "I do see a need to have a property maintenance law. I was not happy with the first draft. It was too detailed, it was too strict, and it wasn't a good mix for rural and residential," end quote. Zaloga, 31, is a legislative aide for State Assemblyman Richard Gottfried of Manhattan and has lived in Saugerties for 5 years. Zaloga said her priority is revising the town's land use regulations so that, and I quote, "businesses will hire locals for living wage jobs and will produce goods or services that will serve our community," end quote. Running unopposed for new terms in Saugerties are town supervisor Fred Costello for a 2-year term, town clerk Lisa Stanley, 4 years, receiver of taxes Julie Dunn for a 4-year term, and Highway Superintendent Raymond Mayone for a 2-year term. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, community information, or COVID-19 updates, visit our website at WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
What else do DJs get? I mean, we're just voices in the air, but we're what makes radio live. And what do we get for it? Seems like every year you pack everything up, move to another town. Gets harder and harder to find a station that'll let you program music you want to play. And, well, you're 40 and there's some kid half your age who will take your job and do it for half the money. And then you find yourself making silly demands. Free coffee. But that's my little moment of honesty, so we can get back to the nonsense.
And now here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the weekend. Well, on Saturday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, then showers and possibly a thunderstorm after 3 p.m. The temperature high will be near 73 degrees. Saturday night, more showers and possibly a thunderstorm before 11 p.m. The temperature low will be around 48 degrees. And on Sunday,
A chance of showers mainly after 2 p.m. It will be mostly sunny with a temperature high near 59 degrees. And Sunday night, a chance of showers mainly before 8 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 44. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Here's a collaboration with Jim O'Rourke and Elliot Sharp. The song is called Kayfabe from the 2021 album Sakuraza.
Shh.